Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. I want to thank everyone so much for listening today and for making Out of This World Radio one of the most popular talk shows in the Seattle area and the fastest growing metaphysical and spiritual radio program in the world with over 200,000 listeners in over 80 countries. During the both the first and second hours today from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Seattle time, I'll be playing a pre-recorded interview that I had with David Icke in England recently. He's an amazing man, and I'm sure you'll really enjoy his interview. Before we start, I'd like to thank everyone so much around the world who supported the program. It's Out of This World Radio is supported entirely by donations. And if you'd like to donate, please go to our webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on the donate button at the upper right-hand corner. I really appreciate all your support because I know we can make this planet a much better and happier place. And with that, I'd like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including the wonderful Crystal Spirit Spiritual Center in Tacoma, Tom Palladino, a famous scalar energy healer from Florida. With that, I'd also like to thank my dear friend Carol, who's designing my website, providing wonderful support, my friends here at KKNW and the Galactic Alliance. Also, I'd like to ask everyone today, listening today, to send lots of love and light to Catherine Tupac in New Jersey. She needs your healing and light. I have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. And if you'd like to get in touch with your loved ones who've passed on, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me at 509-750-9793 here in the United States. If you missed my Galactic Wisdom Conference several months ago, you can order the audios and some videos of the conference for just $97. And if you're interested, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. My next Galactic Wisdom Conference will be held in the same location, Olympia, Washington, from April 12th to the 16th, 2019, and our website is www.galacticwisdomconference.com. In addition, this summer, from July 2nd to the 8th and September 6th to the 11th, I'll be taking a group of people to Mount Shasta, Telos, and the Hollow Earth. We always see UFOs in Mount Shasta. We also interact with Sasquatch, and we've been successful in gaining entry to the Hollow Earth. And if you'd like to go, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Tomorrow I'll be giving readings at what's called Mill Creek in North Seattle, and I hope you can come. The following interview was recorded in the Isle of Wight in Southeast England, where David Icke lives, and I think you'll find it an amazing and wonderful interview. I'll be back at the end of the hour. Please stay tuned, my friends.
Hello, friends. I'm on the Isle of Wight today, a beautiful island just south of the seacoast of England in the southwest corner with David Icke. And we're sitting on top of a beautiful bluff looking out over the, what's this called, this Bay of Water?
Sundown Bay.
Sandown Bay. What a pretty day. It's a beautiful day. And David, thank you so much for coming on my show.
Oh, it's a pleasure, yeah. But you've not done many with a view like that. Eh?
Well, the view is pretty. I can't tell. Yesterday I went swimming down here at the beach, and I couldn't believe how beautiful it is. It's a beautiful sunny day, and of course it's a warm day. It must be in the mid-70s.
Yeah, you're in England, so you're lucky. We've had a bit of good weather recently, but there's times when you come up on this headland and... you know, you worry if your car's not going to take off. You know what I mean?
Oh no!
You certainly don't get out and walk, or you will take off. So you've been very lucky.
Oh, good, good. Well, I think I have friends in high places who made sure we had good weather today.
Yeah, no such thing as luck, just synchronicity.
Yeah. Professor Einstein's always told me that God doesn't play with dice, and we live in a deterministic universe.
Well, I think we determine it. That's the thing. We live in a, I would say, interactive virtual reality game in many ways, in which everything is a form of consciousness, and consciousness is information. And this is why the cutting edge of science, not science in general yet, but the cutting edge of it, is talking about the fact that the universe is information, which is something I've been writing about for a long, long time. But information is consciousness. All information comes from consciousness, if you think about it. All information is an expression of consciousness. So what we're looking at is not in its base form information as such, but consciousness from which all information comes. Mm-hmm. And what is the internet and computers interacting with the internet but information interacting with information? The computer is information encoded to decode other information, and the information it decodes is encoded to be decoded. Mm-hmm. So it's an interaction of information. And when you you post something on the internet, you are affecting the internet. You are changing the internet in the sense of you are adding your unique contribution to it. And in subtle or less subtle ways, it's affected. Mm-hmm. And now what you have posted is there to be picked up and seen by anyone that goes onto the internet. And so in the same way, we are posting onto the cosmic Wi-Fi, if you like, the cosmic web of consciousness and possibility and probability. And we're also being affected by it. And in so many ways, the technological world of today of internets and computers is mirroring technologically the very reality that we are ourselves experiencing. So we are affected by consciousness, and we are consciousness affecting consciousness. And the question is, which perception is at any point is dominant? What we have at the moment and have had through the great span of what we call history, known history, is a perception of little me, of I've got no power, of my self-identity is with all the labels that I'm given or I give myself, with my race, with my religion, with my culture, with my income bracket. And that's my perception of self-identity. And that dominant perception among the human race has led to a sense of little me, I've got no power, to a sense of everything is apart from everything else, because this label consciousness, as I call it, basically is a manifestation of the five senses that can pretty much see only the labels and the apartness. And it's created a situation where a few who have a much greater appreciation of reality and how it works have been able to control billions, because the billions have no sense of their own true self-identity, which is consciousness, mm-hmm. And no sense of their own power, which comes from the fact that they are consciousness. So we are now entering a period where more and more people, nothing like the majority yet, mm-hmm. are starting to reassess that dominant perception, mm-hmm. and to look at the world and themselves in a different way and reassess what this I is. And what I would say is the I is not the labels, which are just experiences. It's that state of awareness that is having the experiences. And that's the state of awareness that will continue when we are released from this particular world, which is nothing more than a band of frequency. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. So it's a great time. And what we're also seeing is an effort by this manipulating few to block this reassessment of self-identity, thus reassessment of reality, reassessment of our own power and possibility, by using technology. Mm-hmm. And the plan is, and we're seeing it unfold all the time, is to, as the crazies in Silicon Valley are openly talking about, is to fuse and connect the human brain mind to artificial intelligence. So artificial intelligence becomes the human mind. And, you know, they're selling it to us as a great step forward, that we will become gods, we'll become superhuman, when actually the plan is for us to become subhuman, no longer human, where instead of manipulating our perceptions, artificial intelligence becomes our perceptions. And so we're at a massive crossroads now, and or a fork in the road, whatever analogy you want, where we have the choice to continue with this awakening realization that we are consciousness having an experience and we are not the experience, mm-hmm. Or to get so consumed by the labels and by the five senses and by the sales pitch of the technological crazies, that we literally give our minds away to AI. And at that point, the ability to reassess self-identity is gone, because mm-hmm. that self-identity will be the result only of what AI says it is. So it's a real big moment in what we call human history, because we're at this fork in the road where these decisions have to be made.
David, I want to share this with you. I know we talked about this earlier, but I was in Lima, Peru, going to Machu Picchu back last January, and I was in the airport in Lima, and overlooking overhead above all the different check stands for the different airlines, David, was a huge billboard signed by a company, it's either Chinese or South Korean, named Hwang, H-W-E-N-U-G. And in that picture, they had a picture of a person who was actually half machine and half human. It looked like a picture from the Borg, and they said the future is AI.
Yeah, well, the Borg is a example, a symbol that I've used in my books, because this is the whole point. The middle stepping stone, if you like, of this is to fuse AI through technology with the biological body, shall we call it, the bodies that we know about now, the vehicles that we know about now, and we experience now. But that's only a stepping stone. And so we become part biological, part technological, which is the example you've just given. But the real plan, longer term, and when I say longer term, I mean people like Ray Kurzweil, the Google executive and sales pitcher for Frankenstein, mm-hmm. Is talking about the human brain being fused with AI by 2030. We're talking in 2018. So it's not like sometime over the rainbow, but it's further along the road. They want to replace the biological human body with a synthetic human body. This is why they're producing a synthetic genome, synthetic blood, synthetic cells, synthetic everything. The synthetic human will not be able to procreate. What we call procreation will be done in laboratories, which is, of course, exactly what Aldous Huxley in Brave New World in 1932 writes about. And, you know, I've been saying for a long time that, you know, Aldous Huxley in Brave New World and George Orwell, real name Eric Blair, in 1984 were not coming purely from their imagination. They had access to the projected agenda, and they were writing about different aspects of it. But you put Brave New World and 1984 together, and what you're looking at is the world that we're very clearly fast entering. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't realize that Aldous Huxley knew George Orwell. Huxley taught Orwell French at the elite Eton College, where the royals go, in Britain. And what Huxley said in Brave New World is that humans would be created, decanted in a world hatchery centres, where they would be created according to different castes in a laboratory situation, and these different castes would be genetically designed to have different roles in society straight out of the caste system. Only this would be done technologically and through the manipulation of the information decoding systems of the body, processing systems of the body, which would be then synthetic. And this is why this transgender explosion has come out of nowhere. I have a saying, I've been saying it for decades, if something comes out of nowhere and is suddenly everywhere very quickly, it's the agenda. Someone's pressed a button on the next stage. And the technique is this, and it's used in many subject areas. You introduce something, and you introduce it on the basis of, okay, I can understand that. Like you introduce transgender, transgender focus on the basis of we must not have discrimination against transgender people. Okay, fair enough. That's a gimme. There shouldn't be discrimination against anybody. It's childlike. But that's the foot in the door. What they do then is then massively and very quickly expand the whole interpretation of no discrimination against transgender people by discriminating against those that have another opinion about the things like neutral toilets and the end of using terms like mother and father and boys and girls. I mean, what's all that got to do with protecting transgender people from discrimination? Indeed, what is it bound to do when you're telling the population in general that you cannot say mum and dad or boys and girls or go into gender-specific toilets? What's that going to do? Right. It's going to create hostility towards transgender people. Right. And what I've found in my experience is, and not just in this subject area either, mm-hmm. it's in racial areas too, mm-hmm. that it's actually not the people, the transgender people themselves, that are driving this. It's activists who are doing it on their behalf. Mm. So much of this political correctness is not coming from the people it's supposed to be affecting. It's coming from activists doing it on their behalf. And so why is this transgender explosion come? Why is it suddenly everywhere, out of nowhere? Mm-hmm. It's because before you can physically, not that there is any physical really, but before you can symbolically, physically connect something to something, you have to make a psychological connection. Mm-hmm. The psychological connection has to come first. This is why we're seeing the psychological connection to artificial intelligence being done by smartphones and tablets and by these digital assistants that people have in their homes now, crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. They're creating a psychological connection to AI because they are creating a normality of humans communicating with AI. It's the psychological fusion is taking place, and it's all systematic. And it's the same with this whole transgender area. If you're looking at the synthetic human, which is designed to have no gender, then you've got to psychologically prepare the population for no gender. Now, if you're taking a leap from specific gender, male, female, mm-hmm. to no gender, that's a big, big leap.
Right.
And what we're seeing is the middle point of that, what I call totalitarian tiptoe, that stepping stone, mm-hmm. system, and that is going from gender specific to gender fusion, and out of gender fusion into no gender at all. And of course, the reason they're targeting the young, not, you know, the youngest of children now in schools, you know, very, very young children with this transgender nonsense. Right. When I say nonsense, I'm not, people think they're transgender. Well, good luck to you. None of my business. I'm talking about the nonsense of the this big explosion of the effect on the population in general. Right. They are targeting the very young because they will be the adults when they want to bring this whole thing in. So they're being psychologically prepared from the youngest possible age not to see gender in the way that we've seen it up to this point. You know, there was a story in Britain this week to show how far it's gone. This is a head teacher who should not be allowed within 200 miles of children, mm-hmm. telling very small children that if they hear someone misgendering someone, then they should report it to a teacher. I mean, so you've got this enforcement of this gender transformation from the earliest possible ages, and the idea is to make the transition into this no gender human, not just a no gender human, a no gender human whose mind is completely artificial intelligence.
For artificial intelligence, David, I guess it goes without saying that an artificial intelligence human mind doesn't have any room for love and compassion.
Well, an artificial intelligence mind only has room for whatever artificial intelligence dictates it has room for. Mm-hmm. Because you look at the quotes from this Frankenstein sales pitcher, Kurzweil, mm-hmm. at Google. Mm-hmm. And he is openly saying, and the sales pitch is, it will make us superhuman. He knows it won't. Unless he's a complete idiot. But he's saying that once the connection is made, then AI will become more and more dominant until the human mind input is first negligible and then gone. They're saying this to us now. Wow. because of the way they're selling it. It's going to be fantastic. And, of course, the more you get people psychologically connected to and in awe of technology, I mean, look around us, right. the more you are going to be able to sell this, give your mind away literally to artificial intelligence. But the big question is this, and I rarely hear it answered, asked, and never mind answered. What is AI? Mm-hmm. We hear all the time, AI this is taking over this, AI is taking over that, AI this, AI the other, but not the question, what is it? Mm-hmm. And for me, there's two types of AI. There's algorithmic AI, which are codes and codings, but there's also what they're calling strong AI, which is basically AI that learns and learns from information received, from observation, and what you have is an internet on which, well, I mean, the number of postings on the internet per day must be unbelievably high into numbers that would boggle the mind. And AI is being able to learn from all of that input every day. Mm-hmm. There's another level of what is called artificial intelligence, I would suggest, that is beyond, obviously, algorithmic AI, and it's beyond strong learning AI. And I say that is the consciousness that has been behind this whole manipulation of humanity. What we're looking at is not an invasion of humanity by some thing in form, although this consciousness does take form, mm-hmm. not least reptilian and the greys and all this stuff, I would say are definitely expressions of it. But in its base state, it is a distorted state of awareness, a distorted state of awareness that takes form. And when it takes form, that species of form that's literally possessed by this consciousness will then behave in ways that mirror the consciousness. And the consciousness is basically what we call psychopathic. So people that are, and form that is, shall we say, possessed by this mm-hmm. awareness will express itself in psychopathic behavior. And you look at the people that run politics, that run banking, that run corporations, that run the global media, that run medicine, that run the upper echelons of science. They're psychopathic. Look at the military. It's all psychopathic. Mm-hmm. But the point is that that which is driving this, although it takes form in its prime state, is a distorted state of awareness, a psychopathically distorted state of awareness. Thus, it can manifest itself through a technological structure mm-hmm. as much as it can through a form of extraterrestrial or human, biological human vehicle. And what my research over 30 years has shown me, anyway, people make of it what they will, and I do support it with enormous amounts of evidence in the books, is that humanity has been manipulated to build a technological vehicle attached to the human mind that will allow the assimilation of human awareness into this distorted psychopathic state of awareness that has been behind this whole manipulation of humanity all along. I mean, if you want to assimilate the minds of humanity into your distortion, what more profound way could you think of than to technologically attach your distortion to every human mind so that your distortion becomes the human mind? I mean, that's the ultimate assimilation. And so when you talk about the Borg, which is what I talk about in the books,
right?
Well, that's part human, part technology. Mm-hmm. The stage beyond that is a synthetic human. And part of the reason for a synthetic human is that to make this artificial intelligence global control grid work, they require very, very high levels of radiation and radiation communication, which the biological human will struggle to cope with. We're already seeing it. And again, you know, if we talk for long enough, everything is going to connect to everything else. This is why they're bringing in 5G without any testing. And they're openly saying they're not bringing in using any testing. Because if you tested 5G in its effect on humans, physically, emotionally, and mentally, they would never be able to bring it in. But it's necessary to for this control, technological control grid to work. And a lot of, if you like, biological humans, bodies, are not going to be able to cope with it. We're already seeing the effects of lower levels of this radiation communication system at work and its effect on people. But 5G is not just a little step forward in terms of its extreme nature. It's a vast, vast step forward. And so synthetic humans will be able to cope with this highly, highly increased radiation atmosphere more better than biological humans. So that's another reason they're doing it. But we are looking at the end of humanity if we allow this to reach its goal.
I know a lot of people have been complaining against the 5G system. For example, near Olympia in a community called Yelm, a lot of people are protesting now against a new 5G system down there. And I appreciate your comments on this so much, David, because people don't know what to do. They know it's not right. They know that there's going to, the amount of low-frequency radiation is going to be vastly increased with the new 5G system. Simon Park said that he told me 2 weeks ago that the new 5G system will actually create a climate, an environment, if you will, for negative elements, including the reptilians, to come in and stay here through artificial intelligence.
Well, you know, the creation of this control grid has been done in steps, and it's not been done randomly. It's been done in a way that's leading somewhere. So the first step was to get people addicted to technology, so with your smartphones and your tablets and all the rest of it. They got people addicted massively all over the world to technology that they hold. The next stage was to get technology on the body as a stepping stone to in the body. So we had the Bluetooth, the Google Glass, the Apple Watches and all that stuff. And the next stage, and we're seeing it unfold already, not least in places like Sweden, is to get technology in the body. But to connect with what? To connect with a global grid of, I call it the technological sub-reality. And it's what Google's Ray Kurzweil calls the cloud. He talks about connecting the human minds to the cloud. Well, the cloud, or this technological sub-reality, as I call it, is based on Wi-Fi. It's based on every inch of the planet being covered in Wi-Fi radiation, which is the means through which humanity will be connected to artificial intelligence. And if you're going to cover every inch of the planet with Wi-Fi, there's only one way you can do that. And that's from the sky, from space. You can, you know, this is why Wi-Fi is everywhere. It's in trains, it's in cars, it's in streets, it's in everywhere you go. But there are still, obviously, places that you can't go, but you can from space. And this is why we're seeing the usual suspects, Facebook, Google, etc., Elon Musk and what have you, putting satellites up on a ridiculous scale, by the way. The number of going up doesn't appear in the papers, but they're going up. Do you know India put 104 satellites into orbit from one launch? Wow. That's what we're dealing with. And these satellites, or lots of them, are Wi-Fi satellites to beam back Wi-Fi from space. And, you know, I've read articles because Elon Musk he wants to do this. Facebook, Google are doing this. And it's Musk's SpaceX rocket operation that he's doing the most of the putting of these things into orbit. This, by the way, is the same Elon Musk who is saying that AI could be the end of humanity. The same Elon Musk who's saying it could be the end of humanity while starting a company to connect AI to the human brain. I mean, this man is so full of contradictions. He must meet himself coming backwards. And the point is that this combination of these internet giants and Silicon Valley crazies are creating day by day this global Wi-Fi cloud to which the human mind is designed to be connected, and it goes much further than that. But let's look at Silicon Valley. You know, I've been talking and writing for 30 years about how a few people control the world. Mm-hmm. Well, and people say that's not possible. Well, let's just hold on a second, okay? Let's look at Silicon Valley. If you look at the entirety of California, Silicon Valley, is not very big. Look at the entirety of America. It's tiny. Look at the entirety of the world. It's minuscule. But out of Silicon Valley come giants like Facebook, Google, Google own YouTube, etc. And although Amazon is not in Silicon Valley, it spiritually is, in terms of its agenda and what it's part of. And let's look at the power that they have. They have the power, as we're seeing, coming out drip by drip by drip, to keep surveillance on the vast majority of the global population, to know their thoughts, to know where they are, to know what they're doing, to know their views on everything. So that's not staying with Facebook and Google. That's going on to the true owners and true creators of Google, YouTube, in terms of its ownership now, and Facebook, and that is the Pentagon and the intelligence networks. People should just do some investigating into who seed-funded these now internet giants. And they'll find a mention of an organization called InQtel, which is the technological development arm of the CIA. They will see the input, too, of an organization called DARPA, which is the technological development arm of the Pentagon. So, of course, what these internet giants are doing in terms of surveillance and data gathering on the global population suits perfectly the agenda of the organizations I'm talking about. But it goes further. They also now control vast, vast, vast amounts. In terms of Google, Facebook together, the great majority of what people see or don't see in terms of information. What these giants censor or don't censor dictates what people see or don't see. Would that benefit the Pentagon and the National Security Agency, the CIA and the intelligence network? Well, just a little bit. And so then you break this down. You look at Facebook, and Facebook is, at least officially, every time I see him, I think, what a joke it is to even think it. But officially, is run by Mark Zuckerberg. His chief operating officer is a lady called Sheryl Sandberg. Those two people have the power to decide, even if they're not the ultimate deciders, they have the power to implement the whole policy of Facebook, what people see and don't see, what they delete, what they censor. They have control of where the data goes that is being gathered. You then look at Google, which is owned by the parent company now Alphabet, which is run by Sergey Brin and Page. And they have the power to, Larry Page, they have the power to decide what Facebook censors, where things go in the search engine hierarchy, and many other things that are controlled by whoever controls Google. You then look at YouTube, which has a chief executive, a CEO, called Wachisky, and she decides what YouTube channels stay up, what YouTube channels are deleted, what information can be posted on YouTube, what can't. So not only are we looking at a tiny few companies in Silicon Valley dominating the surveillance and censorship of information, we're looking there at five people that have the power to dictate the policies of those tiny few organizations.
Wow.
And they have another common theme. They are all vehement supporters of Israel. And then you look at Wikipedia, which is an incredibly manipulative operation where people's biographies, including my own, are manipulated, and things are said that are provably untrue, but they won't allow them to be deleted. And the power of Wikipedia to dictate what people think of people or organizations or events on the basis of what Wikipedia says about them. And when you look into the background of Wikipedia and how they come to their conclusions of what goes in and what doesn't, it's almost bordering on the laughable that anyone would ever treat that as a credible source of information. But they do. What do people do when they want to know about someone? They go to Wikipedia, right? Mm-hmm. Wikipedia was founded, and the current president of Wikipedia is Jimmy Wales, who is a vehement supporter of Israel. And who are YouTube, Google, and Facebook hiring to advise them on what is censored and what is not censored on their platforms? Ultra-Zionist groups like the Anti-Defamation League, that of course goes around defaming people, that are not only vehement supporters of Israel, they are outgrowth assets of Israel. And at the same time that this is happening, any questioning of the and criticism of the Israeli government and the horrors that it perpetrates on the Palestinians is one of the first things to be targeted by censorship. Mm-hmm. Now, you put all this together, and you are looking at an incredible power over global perception of a tiny few people in a tiny few companies now because of the centralization of power and the near monopoly status of these companies. And what I've said about Israel and that area of censorship and no-go criticism is increasingly applying to vaccinations, to any narrative, including the geopolitical narrative, mm-hmm. of that is at odds with what the system wants people to believe is the truth. So we... And of course, what happens then with political correctness? You can't criticize this, you can't criticize that, you kind of have an alternative opinion about that, is you are silencing, both through direct censorship and intimidation of the consequences of having an opinion that challenges the official narrative, you're silencing alternative narratives to challenge the official one. And all this comes together to create the very society that Orwell and Huxley wrote about all those decades ago. Wow. Not by accident, but by design. You see, people have said about me over the years, you've predicted so many things in the last 30 years that have turned out to be true. Mm-hmm. So, well, how do you do that? You do it in the same way that Huxley and Orwell did it. If you can access the projected agenda for the world and you can uncover it, then you can predict the future unless something intervenes to stop that projected agenda happening. And the whole point of what people like me do is to alert the public to what the agenda is, so there's an intervention to stop it happening. The idea is not to be proved right. It's to be proved wrong, because the agenda stops unfolding in the transformation of human society. But, you know, if Orwell and Huxley had access to this projected agenda and wrote about it in terms of it's a novel. And of course, Orwell's novels were never just novels. They were making a statement about things that were very real and tangible, like Animal Farm, etc. Then no wonder it's turned out to be true, because nothing in the intervening time since 1932, 1948 has intervened to stop that agenda unfolding. But now we have the opportunity to do that. The question is, will we? And this is where backbone comes in. Stop being intimidated into silence. When someone tells you not to say something, say it louder, say it more often. Because if we don't, we're just going to keep walking backwards and we'll feel our backs hit a wall. And at that point, there's no more retreating and no more need to retreat, because there'll be no freedom left.
Right, right. I know that Facebook has censored me before for posts about President Kennedy and his messages about our beautiful, bright future. This morning, I just found out from another listener of my program, David, that my book, Messages from the Masters, is now out of print on Amazon. And now people can't order it on Amazon, so they've been coming to me. But I couldn't agree with
you. Well, let me just talk about that, right? This is the game, and Amazon's a classic example. Number one, this is the same with Facebook, it's the same with Google, YouTube, all of them. Number one, you attract virtually limitless seed funding to get you to a place of monopoly without the funding, you wouldn't get there, because the period of getting to the point of monopoly, especially in the early years, is so long without any return on investment that most other people wouldn't be able to do it. But you have limitless investment. And even though when that investment runs out, there's still no prospect of return on investment, more big investment comes in. And in this period, same with YouTube, Google, Facebook, Amazon, just watch the pattern here. You don't censor anything. All right? So you have the face of something that's good. And about, you know, freedom of communication. But then you reach the point of near monopoly. Then the real face comes out. Now you have got no one near you who can even begin to compete with you. So now you say, okay, now we'll start. And the censorship starts. Suddenly Amazon, that would have every book, now starts deleting books on the basis of their content. Facebook deletes postings on the basis of their content. YouTube takes away increasingly number of YouTube channels, some with very, very large followings on the basis of their content. Google starts to push information well down the listings on the basis of content. You see the pattern.
Yeah.
Yet up to the point of near monopoly, none of that was happening. Because what it is, it's fishing line out, okay, fishing line in. And so this is what's happened, and this is why it's happening now. And it's all been systematic all along. This is why Zuckerberg and Bezos and Brin and Page and all these people, they're not the point of power. They're the point of implementation of power, which comes from the shadows.
And if it comes from the shadows, people cannot easily attack it. They can't. How do you counter them?
Well, the only way you can counter suppression and censorship is to keep on saying in every way you can and through every means you can what you're saying. And this is why it's so important that people are not intimidated. Social media has been set up as a massive global mind control operation. Mm-hmm. It started out as and anyone can post anything because they have to fishing line out first. Mm-hmm. And now they are censoring what can and cannot be posted, and we've not seen anything yet. So social media ceases to be a forum, an open forum of opinion, and becomes a tunnel, if you like, of increasingly narrow opinion. And again, we've seen nothing yet. Because where do people get their perceptions from? If it's not a personal experience, then it's information received externally. Mm-hmm. You control that external information. You control people's perception. That's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. You know, because of the work that I do, but I mean, you know, you'll have come across exactly the same. You say something to someone with a particular opinion, a particular perception of a situation, mm-hmm. and you'll give them information that puts that perception in another light, and they'll say, I'd never heard that before. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And because they didn't know that, their perceptions are a certain way. Mm-hmm. When they do know that, their perceptions change. Oh, I didn't know that. I have to think about that again. Mm-hmm. So this is the power of controlling information. Mm-hmm. And this is why they've concentrated it into such enormous concentration of power. Silicon Valley is now the greatest surveillance and censorship operation in known human history.
Wow.
I call it the devil's playground, because that's what it is. And let's take the next step. Those corporations are at the center of global data surveillance and accumulation, which they then pass on. And notice how the diversion is. Oh yeah, Facebook, it's terrible, the media says. How can they, and the politicians say, how can they use people's data just to increase advertising and revenue? No. That's an offshoot of it, mate. It's not the real reason. Mm-hmm. Ask the big question. Where is all that data really going? Mm-hmm. And it ain't going to secure more advertising. That's just an offshoot. It's going into the intelligence network anyway. Yeah. So we've got this great surveillance concentration in these internet giants in Silicon Valley. We've got the censorship concentration there. But what else have we also got? That's where AI and the transformation of humanity called transhumanism.
That's right.
Is coming out of.
That's right.
Silicon Valley.
That's right.
It's the devil's playground, ladies and gentlemen. And it's being sold as the technological cutting edge.
Hello, friends. Isn't that a fascinating interview with David Icke? He's such an incredible man. I felt so lucky to be able to interview him a few weeks ago. We'll be continuing in our next hour with the rest of this interview. It was conducted on the Isle of Wight, which is in southwestern England, off the coast of England. It was a beautiful day, and he had so many interesting things to say. I wanted to tell everybody that I'll be at Mill Creek at the Northwest Psychic Fairs tomorrow from about 10 a.m. till about 6 p.m. tomorrow, giving readings. So if you'd like a reading, please come by. I'd really enjoy seeing you. I'll also have copies of my book that was published a few months ago called Messages from the Masters. In the book, it goes over the death of Senator Robert F. Kennedy, who was assassinated. This week is the 50th anniversary of his death. And Senator Kennedy told me messages on who the real person who killed him, which was a security guard named Thane Eugene Caesar, who actually worked for the CIA, And right after he shot him in the back of the neck, he was transported. He flew to the Philippines, where he's stayed ever since. But there's a lot of messages in my book. If you'd like to see it, get a copy of the book. I'll be having it for sale tomorrow at the Psychic Fair. It's just $20, includes a free reading. If you're interested in getting the book, and if you live outside of the Seattle area, feel free to send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. And with that, please stay tuned for our next hour. We'll continue with the interview with David Icke. Thank you so much, everyone.